Breaching is a podcast produced by me, Özlem Özkan. If you have enjoyed listening to Breaching, please rate it on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, or even better, tell a friend. Your support will make a huge difference. Thank you so much for listening. It's Özlem Özkan, and this is Breaching, a podcast which will take you on a bridge to somewhere else, sometimes somewhere familiar, and sometimes somewhere new. In Breaching, I interview life experts with a story to share. Stories of entrepreneurship, cultural diversity, self-empowerment, personal growth, and other topics that shape our universe.
And we are joined right now by our St. Rose player of the game, Maria Sanchez. Maria, your fourth double-double since entering the starting lineup, 14 points, 10 rebounds, and you've kind of provided a spark for this team right now that might not have been there before. And really, I think your presence in the starting lineup has helped create a sense of urgency for the Golden Knights.
Thank you.
This episode is about being competitive. For this episode, my guest is Maria Sanchez Gonzalez. She was born and raised in Madrid. She has played basketball on a high level in Spain, in the USA, and in the UK. So nowadays, she works as a manager at Nike in Paris, and she's at the same time co-founder of We Are Kin, a startup in Paris who promotes movements. Maria and I have something in common. We are both very competitive. I myself played different sports and games on the streets and always wanted to win and be the best. Competing was a constant state for both of us in any dimension of our life. We both were striving and we wanted to be the best version of ourselves. We will openly talk about why we became competitive and what being competitive does with us, but also with the people around us. So basketball was Maria's fundament in sport. It taught her achievement, teamwork, and friendship. And my strong will made me find myself in a lot of situations where I expressed my competing side. We both think that the sky is the limit. Yet our drive and physical appearance, not to forget, Maria is 1 meter and 83 centimeters, and I am 1 meter and 78 centimeters. We both visit time by time our insecurities and fear to be judged, and because of our competing side and our physical appearance. Welcome, Maria Sanchez Gonzalez. It's really nice having you.
Thank you very much, Ozzy. It's very nice being here with you, sharing this time.
Yeah, thank you for joining us from your really nice apartment in Paris.
Anytime.
So, you know, I really wanted to have a conversation with you in Breaching because, you know, knowing your background a little bit, you have been an ex-basketball player. You played basketball on a very high level in the US, in the UK, and in Spain. Actually, you started in Spain, where you also grew up, in Madrid. If I say basketball to you, what does it say to you?
It really says to me happiness in achieving things, pushing boundaries, teamwork, and friendship. You know, like I was able to just meet so many people with so many different backgrounds, so many different cultures as well. And we were all together just for one goal. But not only that, we all had our differences and we were able to put all the differences behind, come together as a team, really towards that one goal, which was, you know, just to win one more basketball game. But basketball has opened so many doors that if you would have told me when I was 8 years old, I just would have never imagined that this was life, you know?
Okay. And you started playing basketball when you were 8 years old in Madrid?
Yes, around 8 years old. Like my parents, they used to put me into every single kind of sport. But, you know, funny enough, the coaches used to call me lazy because I played tennis and I didn't like tennis. I did ballet. I didn't like it. I did judo. I like martial arts. I did all these different sports and nothing really stuck with me. And even basketball at the beginning, I just didn't like it either. It was more so because it was the thing to do at the time. And one thing after the other, you know, my sister also played basketball. So I think I also wanted to imitate my sister. My father really liked basketball as well. So it was really just that family time as well that basketball brought to us, that then it just stuck with me.
Okay. And then you told me earlier in our pre-conversation about you were 8 years old and you started playing in a mixed basketball team back in Madrid. But in the team, you were the only girl.
Yes, so that is very true.
How was that for you, being the only girl? I mean, you're also, you know, you're a tall woman, something like 83 centimeters. You're a tall woman. You're a, you know, beautiful woman now. When you were eight, you were in between the mixed team of men and women, but you were the only woman. You were the only girl. Yes. How was that for you, being with these boys?
You know, I think like my parents have always empowered me to like not look at the gender, but really just go and do whatever I was meant to do or whatever I was going to do. So at the time it was playing basketball. So for me, it was more the social activity or just the sport itself. And I remember at that time, I still didn't really like basketball very much. So I used to go to the practices just because, again, it was the thing that I had to do. And there was one guy that was picking on me. And I just remember coming back home. Like all these memories are very fuzzy, but like this one memory is very clear. I was coming back home from that practice crying because this one guy was picking on me. And then my mother told me, do not.
What did he do? What was the picking part? What is that exactly?
I don't remember exactly what he was doing, but maybe he was just saying that, you know, like you're a woman, you can't play basketball with us. He definitely was not passing me the ball, you know, and when you play basketball, it's about being a team, passing the ball around. I remember going back home, I told my mom, you know, there's one guy, he's not letting me play, I don't want to go back. And my mother said, Maria, do not worry, just go out and enjoy next time and show him that you can play. And that was just the turning point for me, because after that day, I realized that I was able to play basketball at a good level. As you said, like I'm a tall woman as well. So I was like, well, maybe this is a time that I can use my height for something on my benefit, you know? And so I started playing basketball. And ever since then, it was just a roll in a mountain going ups and downs, but it was an amazing road.
Okay, and how did the boys receive you in this group after you also showed them how you started playing?
Funny enough, the guy that was picking on me then almost like became my friend afterwards. Like I remember after the practice, then we will share our little food or, you know, like the drinks that you have after the practice. So, you know, when you're 8 years old, you don't really think about, oh, this guy is doing this to me. I'm not ever going to talk to him again. So he heard me, but actually that was a turning point for me, which I am very thankful for towards him. And after that, we actually did have a friendship. Yeah, it was just, again, basketball opens up every single door and just brings people together.
Was this the first and the last time that you started playing in a mixed group? Or did you play also another time in another age group in high school, secondary school, or at college in mixed groups?
So after that, it was really, I went into playing basketball into like outside of school. So that was just like a basketball club. My father, he saw an ad on the newspaper and it was like, if your kid is taller than the average height, come and bring them so we can see if they have some future with us for this basketball team. So my father took me and we went there and I passed every single thing and I made the team. And then once I made that team, that I was always like either woman or male. But funny enough, then when I went to the U.S. and I played basketball there in the U.S., we had practice players, so people that practice with us to make us better or like help us. And those people or those guys, they were males, but we never really experienced any gender discrimination towards them or for them or against them.
Okay, because you also like, you know, what I understood from what you said, like your parents also really encouraged you, especially your mom, like, hey, go and just show how you play and do it. Yeah. Use your height for it, because, you know, for basketball, it might be a benefit to be tall. I actually really admire the way you have thought, because for me, it was kind of the opposite. I'm also a tall woman, 178, not 183, but I actually often lowered my guards because I felt I'm too tall. And also, you know, I did a lot of street games outside, you know, basketball, soccer, a lot of like team games where there were a lot of boys present. But I always thought maybe I shouldn't be that good as a boy, you know, because this might be a boy game and not a girl game. So I was kind of hesitant to be competitive, even though I was a lot competitive.
Yeah.
And you did kind of the opposite.
Yes, totally. Yeah, no, it is a shame, because I think like as a kid, like you can build so much and then, you know, you build on from there all the way until now. And it is true, like we are a tall woman and like we could have, or I could have gotten picked on. But thanks to basketball, I was quite a reference, I will say, you know, in the school and in the team. So that really helped me not to get picked on and really like just have friends to like with different height. And yes, indeed, like my mother, I think she's always empowered us to be the best that we could ever be, you know, whether it was in sports or at school or as a person. So yes, I think that it also really helped me not to be conscious about my differences, but really see them as a strength.
I love that, mom. Even though I don't know your mom. Really, really nice. So, you know, during these team games where you, what you said, like, even though you have a lot of cultural differences or you are different as an individual, you have together, you are one because you go for the same goal. What was this goal each time, like within your team, each team you have played? Was it winning? I mean, or what was, yeah, it, you know, you are exactly. you always you want to win, but was it only winning? Because, you know, I am also teaching, right? And, you know, maybe you do the same thing with when you have small kids and when they lose a game, any game they play, outside game, inside game, we always try to teach them like, but it's about the game, don't worry about if you don't win. But somehow inside of us we are like, hey, I just want to win, you know? What was it for you and your teammates?
I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to, from a very young age, like 11 years old, that I went to a club that it was no longer my high school team. Like the objective was also always win and try to be the best. But if you did not win, it was also about what have you learned on that game, you know? Was it because of us? Was it because of them? What can we take from that game to bring it to the next game so then we can be better than this game? So in that sense, you will have the whole week to really work on the flaws that you've had that last game in order to improve. And sometimes it was communication between the players, communication between the coach and the players. Sometimes it was about strength training, you know, like maybe you needed to go and do some more reps of, like strength training or speed training, or just getting some shots up, you know, so your accuracy will be higher. So it was really about trying to determine what had happened for us not to win and what were we going to change for us to win in the next game.
So, and, you know, during these analyzation and also working after analyzing what did go wrong and so you should do something and then keep going and maybe you would win, what it would happen that you would lose again the game, what did you guys do then?
You keep on working. That's the thing, like you keep on working until you see the results. And a lot of time, like when I first went to the US, my first team, we were not so good the first year, and it was very hard for me because coming from Spain, you know, we were the best team in Madrid, in Spain, we won, like we barely lost any games. And going back, going to the US and like all of a sudden like losing 4 games in a row, actually what it shows you and what teaches you is mental strength and determination. And those are the things that you can't teach from a notebook. You cannot teach it in the classroom, but it's really from the experience. And, you know, that's why it's so important. It was very important for us to have a very resilient coach, that she was able to go through all the emotions with us. So whether you had to lose 4 games in a row in order to win the 5th game because you had learned before, or just lose 1 game and then the second one win, it was really about just learning, continuously learning, leaning on each other. You know, you're a team of 12, and if one person is down, the whole team is down. So it's really, you know, as I said, that almost sisterhood feeling that you have amongst ourselves and with a coach as a leader.
Okay. Hey, and then, you know, to also make the listener a little bit understand, you just said US, I said Madrid. So in which countries did you play basketball? Just to sum it up a little bit chronologically.
As you mentioned earlier, I started in Spain. I was born and raised in Spain, in Madrid. I played there until I was 17, almost 18 years old in Madrid. Then I was lucky enough, fortunate, that my hard work in basketball paid off, and I got a basketball scholarship to play in the U.S. and study. I started in New Jersey for NJIT, so I was in the U.S. for almost 4.5 years. So I graduated from the U.S., and then I moved to the UK to play for one more year and get a basketball scholarship again to study my master's. So that was Spain, US, UK. And then I moved to Amsterdam, to the Netherlands. And that's when I started playing basketball, but I was not able to finish that season.
Okay. And so, and then together, it is around like how many years did you play? I was talking about 15 years you played basketball.
Yes, correct. 15, 17 years, exactly.
And are we talking about 15 years of resilience, building strength, and going 100%. Through different kind of emotions each time?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, now that I don't play basketball anymore, that's when I sit back and I look at it in hindsight, and I try to understand every single thing that I've done. But, yeah, everything has been a learning. But the best thing that I will always say about basketball is the people that I have encountered in basketball. You know, it's been amazing, an amazing journey. And yeah, it's been a resilient journey as well.
Okay. So, you know, what happens in our society sometimes, you know, I have it myself too, when you see someone doing something really great in any kind of dimension, right? It can be in sports, in basketball, or any job, or I don't know, building a family maybe. Sometimes, you know, we tend to see only the top of the iceberg, like, oh, she's lucky. You know, Maria Sanchez is tall. Of course she can play basketball. For example, I'm just making it very superficial at this point of time. But that is only the top of the iceberg, maybe even 1% only, but the 99%, what does it really, really take to be able to play on a high level basketball? We're talking now about basketball, but you know, it can be any other sport. It can be even any other something where you want to be really good at. And sometimes you lose, and maybe not once, but 5 times behind each other.
Correct. I mean, for me, it's all about the determination and the hard work. And it doesn't have to be only in sports. It's also in school. It's also at work, in the workplace. You know, I truly, genuinely believe that hard work will always pay off. And in sport, it's easier because you put the hard work, you're sweating, and then you see your results. At work, sometimes it's not so easy because there's many other factors that they don't depend upon you. However, I am a firm believer that any hard work that you will put into the workplace or into sports, it will pay off. So that's the 99% that goes behind that 1%.
What about the smart work? Because, you know, you can work hard, you can make many, many hours, which is, you know, often required, especially during sports. I mean, do not expect. Actually, I would say David Goggins, this guy that I'm reading now, I haven't finished the book yet, but what I understood, he ran a very, you know, long distance without even training. It was kind of the mindset that he did it. And, you know, for basketball or any other sports, you might do the training, the hard, but what about the smart work? Can you tell us a little bit about that? What is the smart part of it? Do you need to be strategic, or do you just need to do labor work, like labor as a farmer? You just go and you just do it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just like maths, you know, like you're not born learning how to calculate, but the more that you practice, the better and quicker you will be. So with basketball, and again, in the workplace is the same, you know, it's all about practice. So you practice, you fail, you practice, you succeed, you practice, you learn. And all these repetitions, that to me, that's really like the hard work, whether it's like sweat and tears or also mentally, you know, okay, maybe this time I don't need to go right, I will go left. And then you implement that and then you see the results. So it's all about that implementation of your learnings day after day.
And what is the feeling you get at the end? Let's say you have trained for 15 years or maybe even 1 year, and then you go to a game. And then you win a game. What is that kind of feeling? Is it like the end result? You achieved it?
No, of course not. I think in life and in sports, in basketball, there's never an end result, but it's definitely a satisfaction moment where you see your hard work paying off. But me personally, I see that and I'm like, okay, we have achieved this. What's next? You know, what can we work towards the next phase? And I think that's also where my competitiveness comes into play, when I think, what can be the next road, or what can be the next challenge, or where can we go together in order to do something different that we haven't done before. So you always put different, you always try to break that that comfort zone.
Okay. And is this what's next on the celebration day, or is it like, you know, after you really celebrate the win, you just start thinking, or are you kind of always on the go of what's next? Or are you enjoying also the journey, the steps in the journey, which brings you there?
I will say that I'm getting better at enjoying the journey. I think maybe like 2 years ago, it was really about, okay, what's next, whether it was on the workplace or in sports. Right now, I think it's also very important to enjoy the journey, to enjoy the little steps. So I'm working towards enjoying more the journey, but I'm definitely a person that I think the sky is the limit, you know, and if there's no limit, let's really try to aim high as possible. We only have one life, and it's to live it to the limit, you know, to live it to the fullest and to enjoy it.
Does it ever get in your way being highly competitive and being really open to achieve any goal, if it's in the workforce or any sports that you're doing?
I will say that in sports is more often, you know, because everybody understands that there is one goal and one objective. I do think that in the workplace, being as a female, an ambitious female, openly about it, I think I've gotten some aha moments where people were not expecting me to be as eloquent about the fact that I, you know, I want to get into the vice president one day, you know, or I want to continue to climb the ladder at work, or I think I deserve a promotion because of this is all the hard work that I have been putting throughout the years. And I do think that hasn't been seen very often in the workplace as a female. However, I must admit that I have had very amazing female mentors in the workplace that have taught me that leadership and ambition is also something necessary with females and with males, and that is not something to be ashamed of.
So you mean like a highly competitive female instead of being a highly competitive male?
Yes, exactly. Like, you can be a female and be ambitious and be vocal about it, and that's okay. Whereas, you know, and like, you need to be okay with that, and you need to be okay with the fact that people will be looking at you in a different way as if you were a male, because they are more used to having male that are ambitious and that they're vocal about that ambition.
Do you feel like male and female, or maybe only one of them, like, get intimidated by your being competitive at the workforce? I mean, you work for Nike, right? I mean, also
I
just going there, you are, you know, you started as an intern 6-7 years ago at Nike, and you are now the city buyer lead in Paris. You buy for all the stores in Paris. That's what I understand. And, you know, coming from as an intern after 6-7 years, having this position, which maybe many people would like to have this position, do you feel like men feel intimidated by you, and women? You know, it's not only the men, but maybe both.
Yeah, yes, but I wouldn't say that it's because of the journey that I have had. It's more so because of how vocal I am about my ambition and my leadership. So yes, indeed, like female can be very intimidated by the way that I come across. And that is something, that's also something that I'm working on, you know, just being conscious of the fact that not everybody is as ambitious, not everybody wants to deliver more. So it's all about the journey. It's all about bringing people together through the journey. But yes, intimidation is definitely one big factor for me towards men and towards women. But I do also think that there's a lot of people that also appreciate that. So again, it's all about just bringing people together throughout their journey to achieve the same goal.
You know, it reminds me a little bit to this, like, you know, when I was much younger, I really learned from a young age to be vocal about things, to just kind of like come up for myself. Hey, this is me. That was kind of my surviving method in life, you know, in school, at the playground, anywhere. And I just kind of pushed myself for this. And this was also very quickly seen in the jobs I had. And I remember after I graduated, my first job was at a school with kids with special needs. And I was working as a psychologist. And I remember that my mentor then, a very, very skilled woman, she really liked the way I worked, but she gave me as a comment, like, people can feel intimidated by you because you just come over as you know it all, and you just come there, you just stand. And actually, the paradox was she did not really know that I was kind of very fearful from the inside. I was, you know, I was also scared, but I kind of never showed that. It was my coping mechanism. But after she said that, I remember I kind of tried to learn to lower my guard. Like maybe I should just adapt a little bit and just, you know, pull back and push. After all, I also a little bit realized, you know, it is kind of a balance, eh? You know, you need to be yourself, and some people will eventually feel intimidated. They will feel, and you cannot save the whole world, right? I mean, you can think about the whole world, about all your teammates, but they might feel, and that is their journey. They need to work on that. So, but finding the right balance of maybe this time I shouldn't be vocal about it. So how do you work on that? You said something about I'm working on it, but how is it for you?
Yeah, it's very funny. I think we've had a very similar experiences, and how it is for me is really just understanding everybody, you know, and again, just bringing people together towards the same goal. And as you say, pulling back sometime and then other times pushing a little bit more. I have a very high energy, so I can come into the workplace and be like, let's go, let's do it, and then let's get cranking. But I do need to understand that not everybody has the same level of energy, the same level of ambition. So it's about trying to give pieces of my energy into these people so then we can come together towards that one goal.
Do you also get sometimes insecure about the comments that they are having about you?
Yeah, of course, 100%. Like I remember not that long ago, it must have been like 3 years ago, one of my female mentors that she was on the leadership, she told me, you know, people are intimidated by you, and I just couldn't understand why people didn't want to come together, didn't want to be honest amongst ourselves. That actually really hurt me, and I cried, you know, and you feel sad that not everybody understands you because you have the best intention that you can have, you know. You're putting yourself out there, you want to pull people together. But the thing is that 3 years ago, I was immature because I thought that my energy could be matched with everybody else's energy or ambition. But actually, it's more about understanding where we all are and try to, again, pull people together rather than trying to just lead the people. So there's some people that they like to be led, and there are followers, and then there's other people that are not so much followers. So again, understanding everybody's personalities and bringing them together and being a teammate, you know, you can't always be the leader of that team. You have to play also the teammate.
So kind of situational leadership you're talking
Correct.
About, really, depending on, we had it at you know, one of the companies I work for, like really looking at the situation, feeling in what you have to do, and based on that, taking actions. But you said something, you know, I just would like to dig in a little bit to the part that you said you always have best intentions. And we talked initially about, you know, the top of the iceberg, what we know in our conscious part, like the 1%, maybe a little bit more. Do you think you always have the best intentions yourself?
Yes. I mean,
you think that?
Yes, I hope so. And I know so. And I hope that people can see that themselves as well. You know, I have the best intentions for the team, and I always want to push people, because I think that people have a lot of potential and not all the time people see it. And just as much as I like to be pushed, I thought and I think that people like to be pushed. But again, it's not the case. Not everybody likes to be pushed. There's a lot of people that they enjoy a 9-to-5 job, or that they enjoy just a walk instead of a marathon. So it's again like trying to find the personalities that there are like you, so then you can do things similar together.
Yeah, there's a really nice book I have read about, there's this student and there's this master, and they say, like, you know, without this master, I couldn't be this great student. And then the master says, but there are so many masters around there, but you have to be the student willing to receive that information and try to do self-examination. And right, you know, also this in this book, Don't Hurt, from David Goggins, he says, people operate from only 40% of their potential. We can do so, so much more, but we just don't go even there.
Which is crazy. And I'm well aware of that. And I don't know, I just feel the sky's the limit. There's endless opportunities for all of us. And I love when people push me in sports, but also in the workplace. And that's why I always use my energy to continuously push people. And again, it's always with the best intentions, because I couldn't see a world with bad intentions, you know? But again, not always those intentions, they come across the right way.
So do you think you have for yourself, not what other thinks about you, but you think you have for yourself high expectations?
Yes.
Or is that your... you do?
Yeah, yes, of course, yes.
Do you feel sometimes anxious because of your high expectations from yourself? I do. I definitely do. I really do. Sometimes I just want to cancel my high expectations. I just think, oh my God, you with your challenges, just leave it out. Just be a normal person, you know, that's what I think then. And I get anxious, but I just keep going.
Yeah.
It's kind of like addicted.
True. I mean, I when you say like, do you get anxious? I don't know if anxiety is the right word, you know. I do see... Sometimes I do agree with you that sometimes you're like, why have I put myself into this situation when I could just be enjoying myself at the beach? You know, like last year we did a half Ironman, and like we didn't even know how to swim, like barely knew how to cycle. And I remember I was on the bicycle and I almost wanted to throw the bicycle on the road and then just stop the race. And I was like, why have I put myself through this pain? It's very painful.
Yeah.
But again, like after those hard moments, you see, you come so much stronger, and just you have so much joy, and the adrenaline is so high that you truly feel invincible. So those moments totally offset the little like questioning times when you question, why am I doing this? And as soon as you remember why you're doing that, your why, you know, that's when I have no doubts. Sometimes it is exhausting, because sometimes I'm like, I wish I would have been sleeping, or I wish I don't wake up at 6:20 every single morning, or maybe having a, as you say, a normal life of just drinking a wine and things like that. It could be easier, or maybe not, you know, you will never know. But I think we all are different, and that's also the beauty of all of us.
Do you own your own decisions like that you're making around this being highly competitive? Or did it also, you know, become a kind of a habit? You know, sometimes we are in this kind of like a mill that we just keep going. Or do you really feel is it still a deliberate choice to be competitive?
It's a funny question. I mean, I think I make my own decision and I'm making my own journey. But of course, like, I'm competitive. So, you know, they asked me, do you want to do a half Ironman? So my competitiveness came out and I said, yes, let's do it. You know, it wasn't really like me coming up with that, let's do a half Ironman or let's do a marathon. But I don't see that as a negative aspect. I think that because I'm competitive, I have an open mind. I say yes to things. So then that also shows me that there is a brighter future, that there's different things that you can achieve. So I generally believe that that competitiveness within me has allowed me to see different roads that I would not have seen otherwise.
Do you know or do you feel there is an aspect in one of your core that make you competitive? Like, you know, sometimes, let's say, you know, with some, for example, people that are overweight, they might have a moment that someone got bully them, you know, or say something. Mm. And that is kind of a moment for them that they are like, you know, now I'm gonna change. I'm gonna be normal weight or whatever. You know, did you have any moment? I will also share you mine because I have an example. I know I'm competitive.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is gonna sound very bad, I think, but I was the middle kid, so maybe I wanted to be noticed by my parents, you know, and at least get their good job from like basketball and from school as well. So I knew that if I was doing good at school and at basketball, they will congratulate me. So I will say like that's probably why. But then I mean it's funny that you touch on, you know, like fat people and skinny people. I just remember I was quite tall, and one of the things that I didn't want to be was tall and fat. Which sounds
the
horrible.
Same. I had the same. No, really? I had the same. I was like, I'm already tall. I don't want to be fat too, because then I will be a block. No, it's really true.
But it is horrible to say that out loud. So, but I don't think my competitiveness came from, I don't want to be fat. You know, I think it was more so, I am with my sister, with my brother. It's three of us. Yeah, I want to be the best in basketball. So, you know, my parents will congratulate me and they will be proud of what I'm doing.
Did you also want to be the best between your brother and
my sister?
Your brother and your sister and your sister. Yeah, did you want to be best between them? Like, I want to be the best child.
Not necessarily like the best child, but definitely like the best at playing basketball with my team and stuff like that, because then, you know, my parents will congratulate me, as I said earlier. But then between my sister and my brother, there's not really a competition per se. So mm-hmm. It's more so on the outside.
It's really funny. It's also a little bit like, you know, you want to be recognized, right?
Correct.
You want to be, yes. You know, for example, in my family, my grandparents, I remember that very well. It's like, you know, it's a little bit weird to say it even, like, but they were, I always felt when I was a very young child, they were very into male grandchildren. You know, that was like male grandchildren is their thing. And I also felt always they got more attention than I got it. I was a girl. And I was like, I'm going to show you what it means to be a female, you know? You know, I started, actually, it is kind of also horrible in a way. My drive to compete started from that core. I was like, I'm really going to show you. And you will recognize me at the end. And I didn't realize it when I was a child. I didn't realize it when I was in high school, even in college and in my 20s. I didn't know that until I did a lot of more self-examination. I came to the root. I was like, you know, this is one of the reasons I'm competitive. But then it was my habit to be competitive. And now I choose for it deliberately. But there's nothing like to show them or not to show them. It is more like, how do you say it? It is more an internal decision. But it came from a reaction on what I was feeling back then. And it's actually even sick. Because of you want to be recognized, and that's why you just do all these things.
But, you know, I mean, it can be sickening in a way, but actually look how far you've become, you know, look how far
indeed.
You've gone. So if you wouldn't
totally agree.
Yeah, if you wouldn't have had that, then maybe you would have had a very boring life, in a sense that you would have never like traveled the world like you've done. You would have never experienced as many things as you have. So I think, like, just like I said earlier, you know, you're also a very driven woman, and that drive has shown you and has opened up as well so many doors, so many windows, so many things, that it's incredible. And I think you should be super proud of that. And actually, you know, like, you might think like it's sickening, but actually, why don't you thank your grandparents? Thank you for making me this way.
Yes, yes, yes. I agree with you. Yeah, you know, I think, yeah, I also have these moments, of course, that I am like, thank you so much that it was this way, you know, with many other things. But it really depends on how you look at it. I at the end decide, hey, it is sick, or what you said, I decide, thank you so much. And these are two different viewpoints, right? You can look at it. So another thing of like being a highly competitive, and also I would say, I think you were really, Maya, as a very powerful woman, very forceful, you know, you can really move things, teams, people. You know, I have seen you with different situations. And do you think, not at the work first, not at basketball, in your private life, men feel intimidated by you in relationships?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, of course. Like, I am quite confident. And I was talking about this the other day. I spent the confinement in Spain. So I was with my parents for almost 3 months or 2 months, you know, and that had never happened since I was 17 years old. So I got to spend a lot of time with my parents, and especially with my mother. We will go every morning either for a run or for a walk. And that was one of the things, you know, that I talked to my mom. I said, Mom, I am worried that I will never find the man of my life, or I will never be able to settle down with one person, because I am very confident. And I blame my mother for this. I say, you made me very confident, and I'm very aware of that. And then she said, and then she told me that, you know, hopefully she said that one man will come across that will understand that drive and that ambition. And but yeah, it is a true thing. We are different females.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so sweet of you, Mom, actually. But I share that thought, what you have. I have had that for a long time. Even when I had a relationship, it was always like, maybe I should lower my guard, you know, maybe I should just take a step back. I shouldn't be too much. I shouldn't be too much of this, too much of that. But yeah, you know, I have to say, I still experience that with some of the things I'm having. Like, yeah, like really, I can feel that also female in a way, but especially male. When I would go in a relationship, feel intimidated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I try to change sometimes myself. Maybe I should just be this girly girl, which I have never been. I don't know even what it is exactly. I don't know. I have an idea in my head, being a girly girl. And, you know, but, you know, that's also the reaction I got. There will be one day another a guy that will see that, recognize this. And maybe that is also the insecurity in my confidence.
Right.
You know, the insecurity in my confidence.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I'm also quite insecure on that sense as well, like just like you are. But I think, yeah, I just don't think that we should change ourselves totally, you know, as you said, like that girly girl. Like, what does that mean? Like, what do I have to do? Because I think I also have that same issue. But I do hope that one day we will be able to find someone that sees the good and the bad on us, but that they won't change the bad on us together, you know?
Yeah, and maybe Maria, it starts with ourselves first. Maybe we have to see it first.
Correct.
We have to really believe in this is us and just own it. And that's it, you know?
Correct.
So, okay, we talked actually a lot about basketball, being competitive, and like, you know, we mentioned a little bit Nike, you work for Nike in Paris.
Yeah.
And how do you bring back the competition part at Nike?
I mean, how Nike propelled and pushed me to be more competitive, actually. Not only.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, like Nike is a highly competitive environment. You have a lot of ex-athletes. So they've been like pro athletes or like even people that are, they're still competing. You also have people that are, they're not highly competitive. So that's also very good because you need to have a mix of both of it. But I will say that just being in the workforce or in the workplace with different athletes has been amazing because they've, again, they've shown me that competition is not only about basketball. It's also about, hey, let's run your first marathon. And actually, you know, from me that I only play basketball to having to run 42 kilometers, that was a challenge. And it was a big, big challenge. But it was amazing, you know. And I would not have been able to do it if I didn't have competitive people sitting next to me in the workplace pushing me to do these things. And the next thing that came was a half Ironman. I had never swam. I had never done road bike. But hey, let's do it. You know, we have a body. You're an athlete. So, you know, this is what we say in Nike, right? If you have a body, you are an athlete. So if you're an athlete, you can do whatever you want to, right? So whatever you put your mind into it. So we said, okay, let's do a half Ironman. And we then achieved it. So that's really how the competition has come into play in terms of sports. And then in terms of the workplace, I will say that having the amazing female leaders as mentors that I have had and that I keep on having throughout my career, just, yeah, I owe them a lot of my journey because it's been an amazing way of leaning in, of learning from someone that I look up to and of bouncing ideas from. So yes, I am extremely thankful for these females.
Okay. So, and then you have also another challenge coming up. You're already working on it. We are
Kin. Yes.
Do I say it right?
Correct.
K-I-N-N. K-I-N-N. We are Kin.
K-I-N. So Kin, it's K-I-I-N. And the word comes from two etymologies, the Greek one and the Latin one. One kin is about your community, your sense of belonging. And then the other one, kin, K-I-N, means movement. So what we want to do is really make movement a daily habit, but it doesn't have to be sports where you're really sweating and you can't anymore at the end of the day. It's about well-being of your mind and your body, that connection, but also connection with a new tribe, with new people that you can find through movement. And that is all a digital app, so a virtual it's a virtual application, so an online platform. So how we're starting right now is we're doing running groups. We run every Wednesday and every Sunday. We've only done it for 3 weeks now.
Paris? This
right
is
now
in Paris?
We're only in Paris, correct. We're running every Wednesday and every Sunday, 7 a.m. on Wednesday and 9 a.m. on Sunday. So you need to wake up early. But we have like a crew of 15 people so far. Again, only 3 weeks in. I'm very excited about where this can bring us towards. You know, the feedback that we've been having is actually amazing because it's all about how people want to get together through sports as well. And what we're trying to do is really break that feeling that sports has to be for the muscle people, these muscle men, or the very girlies that want to just take a selfie after the workout, that they look gorgeous, you know, versus us when we go to the gym, you really look like a hot mess, you know, and that's...
Hot mess, definitely.
And that's what we want to empower people, you know. You can look like this and it's fine. This is how you should be looking like after your movement. And enjoy that as well, you know, and enjoy meeting people through this. So I just came out of a lunch that I had with these people. So these people that we've met running, and it's been incredible. There's so many people that they feel like movement is essential to their daily lives, that we want to continue to propel that, bringing people together, creating that community.
So do I understand right? It's a virtual gym based on membership. And beside that, you also have running groups going on in Paris.
Yes.
at this moment in Paris, and the virtual gym, like, you know, how can I see this? Am I a member and I can log in on any website? What
so
is the website?
Right now
how does
we are
it work?
Working on the website. The website is We Are Kin. So We Are Kin, and Kin is KIIN.co, mm-hmm. and that is where you can go. Right now there's only the landing page, so as soon as you go in there, you will be able to enter your email to learn more. However, within the next few weeks we will really have the platform developed, and how that platform will work is that you will become a member for us, with us. You will have access to unlimited videos, short and long videos, so 7 to 15 minutes, but also 45 minute workout, and then also 2 to 3 lives per week. Right now this is only the building phase, so we're really we have a lean approach to this startup, so we really want to talk to the consumer, see how they interact with their with our workouts. The basic workouts that we want to offer right now are cardio dance, HIIT, so high interval training, and yoga. So those are the three basic ones that we want to do for the live workouts. And then the recorded one, that they're 7 to 15 minutes, is really about targeted muscle. So again, it's about the movement. You know, every single day, you don't have to have a 45 minute workout, but every single day you should be willing, or you should be aiming to work out or to do some movement. So how about you do that 7 minute workout?
Okay, and so, you know, it is like a virtual one. It's also a very, very good option in the COVID-19 times, that, you know, we are very into being hygienic, and the hygiene is really on a high level. So instead of going to the gym, which is actually closed now in all Amsterdam, you can go on VR Kin and look up a workout and do it. And even 7 minutes or 45 minutes, it's really
correct.
Up to you.
Yes.
So you are, like, this is a startup in Paris.
We are a startup in Paris. Is that what you're asking me? Yes, we
yes.
are.
Okay, and then, so you work for Nike, you have a startup, We Are Kin, and you are training every single day.
Correct.
Yourself, like,
yeah.
You know.
I move every single day, yes.
Do you think basketball, I go back to basketball, because I'm coming also to an end almost, has played a role in the grit you're having to create all these three things, what you're doing?
Basketball. So for me, basketball has opened up the world and has shown me that the opportunities are endless, has shown me about diligence. And I think I need to be very diligent throughout these times in order to deliver to the best of my abilities in basketball, to the best of my abilities at work, but also if I want to continue to create my startup, and also have 1 hour to 1 hour and a half for myself to do sports. So really about, I need to prioritize my time and ensure that every single thing that I do, you know, has a high return on an investment per se. So yes, basketball has taught me that, and has told me as well that community is very important for me. And that is why the passion of We Are Kin. I want to empower people to move, and I want to mm-hmm. show them that there's more people like them, and I want to have them meet each other.
Yeah, right. You know what you said also, the community that you have met through basketball, that was really very, very important to you. Okay, but Maria, so I think one important thing that I might have skipped. You have been doing sports for almost your whole life, you know, since you were 8, right? There might be people now listening to this, and they might never be involved in sports. They might not have the mindset as you are having, or I don't know, maybe they get inspired. They are like, you know, wow, what a power woman is this. I would like to also get myself more empowered. And maybe they are not 8 anymore, but they are 35, 40, 45, I don't know, or even men. Do you think it is late for them to start to do any sports?
It's never late to start something new, whether it's a sport or something work-related or life-related. And I will say, if I have inspired these people, or if you inspire someone, Oslan, I think one thing that is very important, at least for me, is really to convey the message that my door is always open. So if these people, they ever want to reach out to me, they can reach out on the Instagram, we.r.kin, so K-I-I-N, that's on Instagram. I'm also available on LinkedIn, or they can reach out to you and then you can just pass that information over to me. I think the beauty of life is also about leaning in towards each other, learning from each other, and pulling these things that every single person can teach you. So you've told me a lot of things, even though I don't say out loud, you know, you've told me about bravery, about just perseverance and just doing mentality. You want to do this podcast and here you are doing it, you know, so if you can do it, I say, why can't I do it? So, and I hope that everybody that is listening to this as well, they can reach within them and understand that they also have a passion and that they can do it as well, whether it's easy or hard journey. And that, you know, whether it's you or whether it's me or whether it's their neighbor, go and reach out for help if you need it.
Yeah, that's really nice. Thank you. Do you have a last message that you would like to share or anything you forgot to say?
First of all, thank you very much for this. It was truly amazing. I was quite nervous to do it at first, but you are an amazing speaker. You've put me through all the whole journey of this together, which has been amazing, incredible. I think what you're doing is also amazing. I told you since the very first podcast that you've done, you know, just how you talk to with that bravery, it's amazing. And the second one, this is for you and for everybody. I know that you already move a lot. So you exercise, you go to the swimming pool. And I just want to encourage and empower, as you said earlier, everybody to really, you know, go out for a walk if that's the movement that you can afford to, or go out for a run or do something. And try to do it on a consistent basis. Try to build a routine out of that, because if you can have that routine within like movement sports, you will feel invincible. It is incredible how important it is to have a healthy mind and healthy body. And because you don't see it per se, it's not a tangible thing. It's hard to commit to it. However, I guarantee you and everybody listening that it is an amazing journey.
Yes, and instead of going 5 times a year really hard, just go every day 5 minutes, have it consistently, or 2 times a week for 1 year
in
a row.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Maria. I mean, you also have really opened a lot of points in me. I think I have admitted a lot of things about me, what I was insecure of here. But thank you so much. I really appreciate
your
time.
Thank you.